This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? I know that guy. Sometimes I've even been that guy. Well, Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like the quick math for knowing when to pay with points or just swipe your card. How to book busy season trips without the busy season sticker shock. Which flight deals are actually deals and which are just clickbait. Hey, times are tight these days, and we don't want to travel dumb. We want to travel smart. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast.
The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. My guest today is Maria Kamau. Before we get to Maria, I'm going to say a few things. First and foremost, TravelTalesPodcast.com. That's our website. That's where you can find all you need to know about this podcast. You can see photos of our guests. You can see stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You can see links to their social media. You can see links to our social media. Our big one is Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there. I would appreciate it if you do that. That costs you nothing. We're also Travel Tales Podcast on Facebook. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And on those streaming services, I ask, as always, if you can give us a nice rating. And maybe you can each tell about 500 to 1,000 friends apiece about the show and pass it on. But the very least you could do is give us a thumbs up or a good rating, because that helps boost our presence a little more and helps more people find us. So if you can do that, I would appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show, or maybe you know somebody who's right for the show, or maybe you just want to write me and ask me some travel questions, or just tell me I'm great, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. All right, Maria Kamau is talking to us all the way from Namibia. That's right, Africa, the other side of the world. She is a native of Kenya, but she was in Namibia seeing family and was kind enough to sit down and do this interview. Maria is a woman who's been traveling around the world for many years. She's been to nearly 100 countries, and she started her own business as a travel coach. And she explains it more. It's a little different than just your basic travel agent. She basically fills in the blanks that you can't get on the internet. Look, AI is muscling into all aspects of our life. People use it to ask travel questions, try to make up an itinerary for wherever they want to go. And yes, it can give you a basic list, but it can't give you firsthand knowledge. It can't give you a human connection and real opinions from someone who's been there, and especially as a woman who's been traveling around. In many places around the world, and most places around the world, women, for better or for worse, quite often for worse, have to deal with a lot more on the road, especially if they're traveling solo. So it's nice to talk to someone who's been there and can tell you what's up when it comes to security, safety, how to make the most of your time, what to see, what to skip, all that stuff. Her company is called Travel with MK, and it's M-K-A-Y, M-K. So you can go to travelwithmk.co.ke and see what she's all about, especially if you're going to Africa. She's explored all 47 counties of Kenya, and I've seen a bit of Africa, but not nearly as much as she has, especially in West Africa, where I've never been. So I loved learning about these places through her. And I was also inspired by Maria's story of being an African woman, an entrepreneur, someone who not only travels, but also travels solo. And in the many years I've been doing this, I haven't really had the chance to interview too many people like Maria. So it was great to get to know her. And you can find her at Travel with MK. That's M-K-A-Y. And you can hear her tell her story herself right here on the Travel Tales podcast. Here's my chat with Maria Kamau.
Maria Kamau. Or MK.
MK. Okay.
Or just call me Maria.
Forgive me, because there's a character in the South Park cartoon that is very popular, and he's a teacher, and instead of saying okay, he always goes MK. So every time I see your name written MKAY, I think of that guy. So I apologize already.
Forgiven.
Okay. So where are you talking to me from? I know you're in Namibia. Are you in the capital?
Yes, in Windhoek. I'm actually based in Nairobi, but I'm visiting my sister here who lives here, and she just had a baby. So yeah, Namibia for a while.
Well, great. So for the people listening, I will say right now, I mean, we are doing this from halfway around the world from each other. So the technology is amazing, but there is a lag, which I understand because it's bouncing off satellites in space. And so I want to just have a warning. I just want to have a warning to the listeners that if there is a bit of a lag, I will try to edit it the best I can. But hey, there's a delay because, you know, we're talking to on opposite sides of the world. So it's understandable. And it's amazing that I can talk to you at all doing this. So I thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Where are you actually at the moment?
I am in Los Angeles at home.
Wow. Yeah, that's a long way away.
It's a long way away. And I have flown to Africa in the past, and I've been to South Africa, which is near where you are, and I can tell you that is probably the longest journey. Yeah. That is about as long as you can fly around this earth, because there's no simple way to get there from Los Angeles.
Sure.
But Maria, tell me about your company, and tell me about the business you started. When did you start it? And when did you decide to make travel your business in life?
Great. So maybe I'll just step back a little bit. Travel hasn't always been my business. I'm actually a career data consultant. Started in computer science many, many, many centuries ago. And generally worked for non-governmental, what you call at your end, non-profit organizations for most of my career. And generally, it involved a lot of travel, which I didn't mind. In fact, I thrived because I enjoyed traveling. So I've actually worked in Kenya and worked outside Nairobi and Mombasa. I worked in and lived in Somalia. I've lived in South Sudan. And in the process, I fueled my passion, which was travel. And passion is not just about going, it's any new place. So I am persistently curious. And so whether I'm traveling locally to other cities nearby or a new county, because Kenya is divided into 47 counties, before there were districts, and I've traveled to all of them, or it was across borders, regionally within Africa, or internationally across other continents. First time was in high school when I went to Germany on an exchange program. I actually chose to learn German because I knew there was that exchange program coming. And so we hosted German students, and then we stayed, went to Germany for 4 weeks. And I stayed there, and it was my first, you know, international exposure. Came back, you know, life moved on. And along the way, because of extensive, you know, travel and enjoying it, I actually started a travel agency, which would be the natural way to, I mean, well, yeah, it's usually the place to start to help others to travel. I didn't enjoy it. And for the very reason that I didn't travel. So it was a side hustle. So I was continuing my career, you know, holding a full-time job. And this was moonlighting. And I actually quit work to follow it through. And then it just wasn't working because I wasn't, for many reasons, but one of the many is that I couldn't travel as much as I thought I could. Running a company, being an entrepreneur was a whole new experience, and that is a whole other story. but anyway, I went back to work, and along the way, I thought, you know, there's got to be some way that I can help people travel, because of course, you know, friends, family, strangers would ask me, you know, about my travel. I'd post a few pictures, talk about my experiences. So, you know, I just, let me say, I stumbled upon coaching. And coaching is not new as a concept, you know. In fact, it has really grown and evolved across different sectors. So, you know, sports and then leadership and then health, and then, you know, every direction you look now, there is some form of coaching. So yes, coaching is new to travel, and it can be confusing because in travel, there are advisors, there are consultants, there are agents, and coaching is not any of that, but can be combined with all of those. And coaching is really working with someone to empower them to travel. No bookings, no arrangements, but helping someone who wants to travel or who loves travel or who has never traveled, walking alongside them, working with them hand in hand to enable them to travel with confidence, to make their bookings or plan their travel in a way that works for them, not according to what they see or what other, but really just to reflect and to answer those questions internally and enable them to travel with confidence on their own terms in the way that they like to travel. And so I work with women. There are men who make inquiries, but I work mostly with women because, you know, I resonate. I can enable them to, you know, I can probably respond to their concerns because I have experienced many of the fears or concerns or questions they may be addressing to me. I have helped men as well, but really my preference is to target women, because generally right. Men don't ask for directions. So they say.
Okay. Well, you made my job very easy because I asked you one question and we're done. I want to get back to your childhood growing up and that first trip to Germany. And yes. You were mm-hmm. born and raised in mm-hmm. Kenya, like you said. And tell me about the times. You know, this was... You know, I think we are around the same age. You're younger than me. I'm 58, but we are the same generation, I think. And going to Germany.
Oh, just slightly. Yeah.
And going to Germany at that time was a strange time, you know, and a lot of things happening in Germany. And you said you picked it because you wanted to speak German and learn it. Tell me about the culture shock. I'm guessing that was your first time to Europe. And was that your first time out of Africa?
Yes.
And what were your impressions? And was it like you thought it was going to be? Or was it different? How was it different than you thought?
That's a big question. But let me say this. Really, I have to say I've been very fortunate because we actually traveled to Germany in 1989 in August.
Wow.
And it just happened to be that we were in Berlin before the wall came down. So that was something we only knew. We were so fortunate. It was such a great coincidence that we got to see before it came down. So we were... As you said, it was really a strange time.
I was there in 1989 as well, in June, traveling my first trip ever out of the U.S. Uh-huh. And I stayed in West Berlin with a young man, a friend of a friend. We stayed at his apartment in West Berlin, and he is born and raised in West Berlin. And I asked him if he thought the wall was ever going to come down, and he said, no, I don't see it. And then 6 months later, I'm watching television, and they're smashing it down. It was the weirdest time. And the wall was very weird. You remember? You remember how strange that wall was?
Yes. You know what? How fortunate we were is because it was an arranged trip between governments, we actually got to cross the wall. So that was an amazing experience. We had been in Germany for maybe 2 weeks already. So we were staying in Kiel, a small town in the north of West Germany at the time. We were staying with families, you know, just getting acquainted, culture, strange. Let me say our biggest culture shock was just how open and different families were. I mean, a simple example, you know, because, you know, Africans, very conservative in many ways. And having people in the house, for example, you know, your counterpart, your sister staying over with her boyfriend in the same house and their parents is just a complete no-no. So... Those were like very, you know, people in bikinis or undressed in the house. And, you know, that kind of, it was really just shocking. We were very shocked, I have to say. That was near traumatizing. But also, you know, the efficiency, the development, you know, we encountered, I ate pizza for the first time. By the way, it was my first time out of Kenya, not just out of Africa. So everything was new. on a flight long haul, you know, the language, the culture. And so then we traveled around Germany. And so we actually got to go to Berlin. We were taken around West Berlin. And then we got to enter East Berlin. The immigration check, or the check at the border, took us so long because of how thoroughly we were checked. Remember, we are 15, 16, 17, or thereabout. And so, you know, we are young, we don't know what's going on, this East-West story. But anyway, it took us a long time because of one of our classmates who got her passport when she was 10 because she had been in an international competition. And so the picture on her passport was of her at 10, and now we're 16. It took an extra half an hour to an hour. Many supervisors checking and rechecking to confirm and accept that this is actually the same person. And then we were let through. And the contrast on the other side was just unbelievable. One thing I could remember, it's a long time ago. We don't have many. I don't think we were even allowed to take pictures. But one of the interesting things was like the same car. Everybody drove the same car.
The
atmosphere was very different. So, oh, is that it?
Yes, the little Trabant. It's a little...
the blue car.
Yes, it was a very East German made, not a very good car. You know, it was very cheap. And everybody drove them now. So now you can take a tour in the former East Germany. You can take tours in those old cars if you want. It's not the most comfortable tour, but you can take them.
Oh.
So I actually did the same thing. I went into East Berlin for a day, and they made you buy a certain amount of their money, East German money, to go in there. And I went in on a Sunday where nothing was open and I couldn't spend it. So I still to this day have some East German money that I've saved from that time. It was, yes, you're right.
Wow.
It was very strange.
Yeah. So that was interesting. Very drab buildings. It seems so, sad, or it was just such a different atmosphere. We could even feel it. The people look sad, so much security. And so, of course, we were very happy to get back to West Germany and, continue our fun times. Getting
I can imagine.
On that side with, you know, everything that we got to experience.
Yeah, West Germany was always very
but that
open.
That made an impact. I was fascinated. Yes.
I mean, you could see nudity on television.
Yeah. we could see nudity in the house, in our parents, which was just... I mean, people are just too easy, you know. I mean, how they interact with... this was just so weird.
But
on the flip side, I mean, it was so amazing. One thing we also enjoyed very much was the amusement parks. Oh, that was like, things like never seen. That was interesting.
Did it open you up? You know, you try to explain this to younger people now, but the internet didn't exist. You weren't, did you find all this new music and television and films and media that you couldn't get back home?
Yes. I mean, for us, remember, it was cassettes. So
yes,
certainly bought. I mean, people like you would understand what that is.
Yes, I remember.
Yes. LPs. And interestingly enough, we also encountered video for the first time. Actually, my German father, or the father in the family that hosted me, was very excited about this big video. I mean, I remember the large size. He always had it on his shoulder and he was videoing everything. And so he sent this recording, you know, on the VCR. To me, short while later by snail mail. And I kept it for years. And it's only the other day that I converted it to, you know, a media, because, of course, we don't have a VCR.
Yes.
And so I have one of the oldest recordings of my, you know, life in movement, thanks to that trip.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, it had a big impact. And interestingly enough, it doesn't happen to everyone. I mean, these are things that are innate, because I do chat with some of the classmates we went out with, and there's a lady who told me categorically she hates travel completely. So, yeah, it resonates differently with different people.
Man, that's amazing, because I have no video from that time. I don't have any video from my childhood. And nowadays, you know, kids have video of every day of their lives. I have nothing, you know, and I looked back during COVID, I found my old photo album from that trip. This was my first trip abroad. I did the backpacking thing around Europe, you know, for 6 weeks after university. And in that entire 6 weeks, in that entire 6 weeks, I think I had maybe 50 to 60 photos. And now, nowadays, that's one day.
Precious photo.
So this was like you had the same experience I did in that this one trip, that first trip out of the country to another continent, to another place, changed your life. Mm-hmm. It changed your perspective, didn't it? And it made me want to travel for the rest of my life.
Precisely. I mean, for me, it was like just unbelievable, the world out there, you know, so different, so vast. And the very fact that we had to travel, of course, I can't remember, but we probably took 8 to 10 hours to get there. And in my mind, I was just thinking, because I also enjoy geography and maps, and just thinking all those countries in between, you know, what lies between there, you know, and how was I ever going to, you know, make my way. And for sure, it was like this I could do for life.
So I've been to, of the countries in Africa, I will say, I've been to Kenya, Tanzania, I've done South Africa, Zimbabwe, and Rwanda and Uganda. But I know what people don't realize is just how huge, just how huge Africa is. For one. Mm-hmm. And two, I remember I had I took an Intrepid tour in Tanzania before my Kilimanjaro climb. So we did the safari and everything else. But my guide was a local African woman. I think she was Tanzanian. And she was in her 30s. And it was very strange. And she would say how it's very unique for her as an African woman to A, still be childless in her 30s. And so they were very suspect of her, but to be her own business person. Have you, as a Kenyan and an African woman, had difficulties being a woman in your business?
Not really. I guess, you know, the world has evolved. Our cultures have evolved. Certainly, being unmarried by the 30s, 40s would attract a frown, whether you're working or not.
Yes.
But, you know, as time has passed and it's more, you know, perhaps more of us are encountering, you know, more and more ladies who are unmarried or without children, it's not as frowned upon. It still raises eyebrows for sure. Doesn't really, I don't think it should really ever become the norm. It's just fully accepted. But yeah, you get used to it. And because, you know, we are able to look after ourselves, people, you get used to it. It doesn't even bother me anymore. But interestingly enough, I mean, you still get those eyebrows if you're in rural area, if you encounter, you know, the older folk, and always drifts to, you know, where is your husband? Where is your, where are your kids? No, I don't have any. You can see the judging, but, you know, you move on.
Did you find it difficult to convince other women, such as yourself, that it's okay to travel and to even travel alone? Is that one of the reasons why your business, you like to focus on working with women? I know you said that men don't like to ask directions, but do they even ask directions from other men? Do they, do you find men in this business will don't want to take advice from a woman, but they will take travel coaching from a man?
Let me say, really, it is the reason I do the business. And what I found with business generally, even if you keep reminding people that this is the person I'm looking for, if there is someone who wants and desires your business, it wouldn't matter even if you keep throwing the word woman over 40 at them. They will reach out to you. So I have had male friends reach out with queries. I've even coached a male client. But yes, you won't have, certainly those are very few, but my desire is more for women because certainly there's very few of them, particularly African women traveling solo. First of all, women traveling solo is what I've come to realize is a concern even for developed, you know, even from people at your end. They are still women, who, it doesn't matter what color. I mean, just women just are uneasy, which was a surprise for me, actually, because, of course, there are a lot of assumptions when you are not well-traveled or have not encountered this sort of folk. But, yeah, when it comes to women in general, certainly the fears of traveling solo cut across, races, cultures, you know, regions, doesn't matter. But particularly, and certainly, obviously, the majority are from developed nations. And so from Africa, what I'll say is that there are very few or too few African women who travel for tourism and leisure. Or shall I say, people have not been exposed to too many of them. So even in my travels, I do encounter raised eyebrows. It is confusing for immigration, like, you know, how, you know, what are you doing here? I mean, are you really coming for tourism? Because they've mostly encountered African women who travel for work, for business, maybe to visit family, to attend conferences, but purely just for travel, too few of them, I have to say, too few. So I've actually it's the reason I'm running this business this way, just to inspire, to encourage, to support women of color to travel more so that we also, I mean, people will, you know, have these perceptions because they just don't encounter enough who are different. So if we want to tell our story, then we have to be the ones out there interacting with people, presenting ourselves, and let people see that we are all different types. You know, we yes. have the narrative now selling and repeating and, you know, that, you know, Africa is not only about poverty, but, you know, now we need to also shout a little more that they are actually Africans, women and men who desire to travel, who want to travel. And so I'm also talking to them to also help them understand that people also, the world is not as crazy or as dangerous as it looks or as it sounds or as you worry about. You need to get out there because it is a safe. It is possible to travel and come back in one piece. And people are happy and willing to meet with you and interact with you out there.
Tell me your hardest experience dealing with, say, immigration or police or officials of some country that you've visited. Where was the hardest place for you? And was there ever a moment when you thought, oh, I might get turned away, I might get arrested here, do I have to pass a bribe? What's happening? Tell me your story.
Having traveled to 96 countries, of course, I've had all varied experience in all shapes and forms. But one of the interesting ones, I don't know, maybe I should mention the country. I don't want to bias people. But there is this country that we arrived, they do not need a visa. Officially, Kenyans do not need a visa. And so we presented ourselves at immigration, and I was with my sister. And so they proceeded to ask, some of these are usual, and, you know, it wasn't, the requests vary, but we get used to being called aside, you know, you stand aside, come this way, and we're used to taking a longer time at the immigration. So he asked us to fill forms in which we were asked, you know, do we have enough money? Do we have do you have credit cards, debit cards? What amount, you know, do you have on those debit cards? Show us the cash that you have. And so we showed. I was a bit casual about it because I'm like, yeah, I'm used to this. This is pretty recent within the past 2-3 years. So I was a bit casual. I was like, okay, here's $500 or something. Here's, have these debit cards. This is the amount that's on them. Of course, not precise, but enough, you know, from experience to know that I can afford my way. And so then they went in, you know, they had, we even had to show the cash to a camera. He says, show that cash, wave it to the camera. Okay, we did that. And so then he went in, got some papers, and then came back. And then he asked us to sign some papers. So, you know, for us, you know, this is standard. It's a visa. So, okay, you give us the papers and sign them. Often, as in, you know, other cases, similar cases, sometimes you don't even read. But as I was signing and I started to read it, I read that I am signing that we have been denied visa because we do not have enough funds. And we were like, what? No, we are not signing this paper. What do you mean we don't have enough cash? We have shown you the cash we have. And then he says, no, you didn't have enough cash. You need to have $5,000 on you.
What?
And that took me back. I was like, $5,000, you're here for 3 days. What do you mean? And then it was my sister who picked it up and said, dollars in local. In fact, before that, he said, you have to have the $5,000 and you have to go to an ATM, you know, get a receipt to show us that you have $5,000. And so we took, like, what the hell? $5,000, we are here for 3 days. What do we need $5,000 for? And then my sister is the one who picked it up and said, it's in the local currency. So, you know, I was like, oh, okay, not US dollars. But, you know, when we worked it out, that should have been about, it was a shock, should have been about $700 or so. So we did have that. It's just that we didn't show it because he didn't ask us how much we should show to show that we can afford it. So we actually stood our ground and said, look, if it is the 700, we have it. And here, we are only staying for 3 days. Here is our booking for a hotel, already paid, and here's the evidence. And so what are the reasons? There's no need for us to go to an ATM. We have enough money. We're taking 3 days. We are not signing these forms. And of course, it was, you know, it was uneasy. It was uncomfortable, but we were not aggressive. We're just assertive. You know, you can imagine this law enforcement, who knows, he can still say no. But, you know, we stood our ground and said, look, we have the cash. We've made our booking. We're not here for a long while. We have debit cards. There should be, what else do you need from us? And so he was also taken aback. That was interesting. I don't think he expected us to, you know, push back.
Right.
But he said, okay, let me talk to my supervisor. He disappeared. It took some time. Actually, we had to wait for another 45 minutes or so. But in the end, he came back to ask us for, you know, I think $20 or something for the visa. And he gave us the visa and, you know, carried us off on our way.
Wow.
That was an interesting experience. I mean, we've had step aside and stuff. But yeah, certainly that has been the most, direct running. Wow. You know, our entry into our country was, you know, going to go as unexpected.
So you're coming from a city and a country that, you know, Kenya has been dealing with and handling, you know, millions of tourists for many years, and their tourist infrastructure is pretty well situated, but the rest of Africa, not so much. And of the countries that I've been to, you know, I was impressed with how Rwanda has really kind of rebounded from their horrible, you know, past, you know, in the genocide and everything. What other countries in Africa do you see that are really doing tourism well and embracing it and going in a new direction and maybe not exploiting, you know, the locals or the animals or anything else? Is there a country that you see that's really coming up and is doing well in that aspect?
That's a good one. And I've traveled to quite a number. I have to say that, of course, I must point out that, as you've said, you know, Kenya, SA, even Namibia, Egypt, a lot of these countries, we call them Africa for beginners. So this is always the encouraged place to start for those who've never been to Africa. And I've been to a lot of African countries that, their infrastructure not so developed, particularly West Africa. If it sounds like you haven't been.
No, I haven't.
I think you would be surprised.
Yes, that is the one. West Africa, I have not been. So I've always wondered about it. And, you know, it's you try to follow the you know, the political parts of where can I go, where is it safe to go, where will they have a good accommodations, where can I get good flights, where, you know, so where in West Africa do you think is is there countries in West Africa that surprised you that they say, oh, I didn't know it was this beautiful or friendly or someplace?
Let me just say this as a general disclaimer. Really, if there's one thing I've learned from all my travels, every country in the world is beautiful because it has a sunset and a sunrise. Maybe very up north, the sunrise is continuous, I don't know, for 6 months, and then maybe disappears for another six or something like that. But yeah, every place is beautiful. It has its beauty. So, and Africa more so. Mostly because it's underdeveloped or underexploited, let's say. Because so most of it, much of it is natural. What Africa lacks is really, yes, as you mentioned, the tourism resources in the way that people expect. So actually what is interesting is that in response to your question, the surprise I've had in West Africa is how, it's not fair, it's like to say, let me say, underwhelm in terms of developed tourist resources. I think I've been spoiled by Kenya, East Africa, Southern Africa, in many ways, because, you know, it's much more developed on this side. On that side, and to be fair, I learned after visiting or after, you know, trying to explain my underwhelmed experiences, you know, it's gone through a lot of turmoil, civil wars, coups, and also the extent to which infrastructure could be developed was limited. But they are making an effort. Ghana, I was pleasantly surprised, having been the first country that got independence, had a very impressive airport. I was so impressed. I was taken aback. I was like, wow, oh, this is lovely. This is, and it was relatively new at the time when we arrived. So that was really nice. And when we drove out, just, you know, within maybe 5 to 10 kilometers radius, nice set infrastructure. But beyond that, it was a bit of a shocker. Like, you know, the largely underdeveloped, you know, beyond a small part of the city. And this replicated, you know, to many of the West African countries that I've been to. So they are like waking up now. So putting together packages or, you know, creating what to do's and what to see's and developing them. They are not so well developed. But Senegal was good. Morocco, for a West Africa country, is another.
Oh, yes.
It's not quite West Africa. This is North Africa.
Right.
But it's certainly
North Africa,
another. I would say, yes, yes. So North Africa in general is slightly different. But I enjoyed Senegal. I enjoyed the West African countries. It's just that I wish they have more developed tourist resources. So they have stuff to see, natural resources, but, you know, the packaging, you know, and the, you know, getting tours, ready tours, it takes a lot more. You really need to do your homework before landing there or...
The extent of my experience in West Africa was being held over for 9-10 hours on a layover in the Lagos, Nigeria airport, which was an experience I wouldn't suggest for anybody. Wow. That was a long, long layover. That was rough.
I can imagine.
Oof. But yes, well, Morocco and Egypt have been on my bucket list for many, many years, and I have not been to either, as has Namibia. And so tell me about Namibia and how is it a different, say, safari experience from, say, Kenya or Tanzania or any place else? What makes it special?
One thing about Namibia is that it's very large, maybe similar to, slightly smaller than South Africa, but like twice the size of Kenya, has very few people. So for a really large, I think it's about 900 square hectares or something like that, or square acres, 900,000. And it has like 3 million. I think they just passed the 3 million mark the other day. and it's largely desert.
Yes.
So the first shocker, if you're not aware, you know, after you've been to a Kenya or South Africa, is the shock that Namibia is largely desert. So vast tracts of land. It's not like intense desert like Sahara, but they do have the Namib Desert, which is like the oldest desert understanding in the world. So it's largely desert, but because it was a colony of South Africa under apartheid, it is very well developed. It was a German colony a long time ago after the World War, the British took over. So the Boers also settled here. So it has German, a lot of German influence, German residents or people of German origin, Africans. And, you know, the majority obviously are the Africans, but remember it's only 3 million. So
yes,
they have, it's well developed. The infrastructure is well developed and so is tourism. And they have resources. They have diamond. They have, so they are not struggling. What they struggle with is the largeness of their country. But there is, the most beautiful thing about Namibia is that that desert stretches to the Atlantic. And so you have the contrast of a desert right by the Atlantic Ocean. And the Atlantic Ocean is cold, unlike the East African, the Indian mm-hmm. Ocean. And the desert is hot. You do have a bit of life there, but it is an, you know, an intense desert. They have wildlife in the north, where there is, now it's a different, you know, when you go far north, it's your safari will start with traveling through this vast, you know, quiet country, and then you get to this oasis, the salt pan, the tosha, where the animals are. And so it won't be through grassland per se, and they do have the patches, but you have that semi-desert. So it's a different kind of environment. And fortunately, because I have family here and have been traveling here since, you know, practically for 20 years, I've done a lot. So they have a similar, they have a Grand Canyon in the south, what they call it, the Green Valley, or anyway, there's a canyon of sorts. There is the wildlife in the north. There is a huge waterfall that just isn't talked about enough between Angola and Namibia far north. They've got a lot of communities that still live in their cultural or regional way, like the Maasai of Kenya. We have the Himba, we have the Damara. And, you know, you can visit those villages and they're still living, you know, like they did many centuries ago, which has its positives and not so positive because people are not going to school, not enough children go to school. They have the beaches, yes, of course, you know, where the desert meets the Atlantic, there's Swakopmund, like beachside, but not, you know, just warning again, water is cold, so it's a different kind of experience, but it is beautiful. They have an intense desert where people go to see, so the landscape. So we climb dunes, you can go and live in, you know, up north. So the diversity of the landscape makes it unique in the way that there are very different things to do, only that you're going to spend hours either on the road or costly flights within the country
right.
to be able to get around and get a feel of each sort
yes.
of warning.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about next question about prices. What countries do you think are, well, we know which ones would be more expensive. Kenya can be more expensive just because it's so popular. Mm-hmm. Kenya and Tanzania, but is Namibia yeah. expensive? South Africa can be very expensive as well in terms of African prices. So what countries do you think are a good bargain? And what countries in Africa do you think are maybe a little overpriced?
Mm-hmm. So I think it goes with the extent of developed resources. So I will tell you right off the bat, like, for example, Burundi's a beautiful country to see and low cost, but maybe the resources will not be as extensively developed as its neighbor north, Rwanda. Malawi is a great place to go. Namibia is definitely expensive, I'll tell you that. But Malawi is a quiet, underexploited country to visit. The lake is beautiful. The country looks tiny on the map, but it is, you can cover quite some ground traveling across it. So yes, in terms of tourist resources may not be vastly developed, but around the lake, There are lots of, you know, and the lake is beautiful for fishing, for if you're the diving type, if that's what you enjoy, or, you know, sea life, which I guess that would be lake life, water life. And it's very, very beautiful and underexploited. So it's a good place to go. Even Kenya and Tanzania, you know, there's a budget for everyone. You can travel cheap. You can travel, you know, high cost, 5-star, 6-star. West Africa, relatively so. What's difficult about West Africa is getting there. But traveling around, in general, in Nigeria, a bit pricey. But Ghana, we found manageable. Ivory Coast is expensive. Senegal is also pricey. The Gambia, not. The Gambia was relatively low cost. Where the French are present very loudly, it's expensive. So if you think of Djibouti, those are expensive.
where the French are, it's expensive. But the bread is good usually, and the coffee.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, you will actually find probably real French bread. A lot of French imports.
Yes.
In those countries as well, largely French imports.
Of course.
Yeah, but those tend to be. Yeah, expensive because of and the development as well and presence
so
of French.
When you have people from anywhere come to you for advice, and especially people from whether Europe or North America, and they say, "I only have a week, I want to see animals, I want to see the animals," where do you send them? Where do you usually send them?
That would be in Kenya?
Anywhere. I mean, where if they only have a week and I want to go to Africa and see animals, where would you stick with Kenya? Because it's easy to get to and they can see a lot in a short period of time?
Yeah. Depending on how intensively you want to engage with the animals, I think... I have to say that Nairobi has made it pretty easy because there is a national park within the city. There are conservancies, shall I say, like the Davis Sheldrick Elephant Sanctuary, where you can actually interact with elephants, young elephants which have been rescued. There's a giraffe center where you can actually interact with giraffes. And so you can have intense, and even there's time to do a quick Masai Mara trip. Can actually fly into the Mara, fly back, Amboseli. So depending on if you want, you know, intense safari, there's Lake Nakuru, which has, you know, the flamingos, and they are not far. Any of these are 1 week. You can actually do, if that is your focus and your priority and you don't want to do much else, then you can, that's enough time. You can do 2 nights or 3 nights in the Mara. You can stay in town, you can travel out of town, and travel out of town is good so that at least you're able to see a little bit of the country on your way. So you can take a road trip, you can fly, depending on your budget. But yeah, or Tanzania. Tanzania is also good too, because you can also get to see a lot in a short time, because each of these, Serengeti is also within reach. A week is good, and the logistics are not too complicated to, you know, do a quick to get there, and then you can determine how many days.
I saw your page and about some of your past travels, and I saw that we had a similar experience. Both of us, we've both hiked to Kilimanjaro. We've gotten to the top, and judging from the sign at the top, you know, the photo of you at the top near the sign that says "Welcome to the Peak," we both may have been there around the same time, because they keep changing that sign, and it looks different now. So I did it in 2014.
Yes.
I did it 2014. What year did you do it?
2012, at the end of 2012.
Okay, so very close.
Yes, indeed.
Which route did you take?
I think it was Marangu, the 6-day one. I think it was Marangu. Which one did you take?
I did the 5-day one that had the huts, the built-in huts, and the other ones you had to, you know, bring your own tent and set up camp. So, yeah, I did the one with the built-in huts.
I think we did the same one, but 6 days.
And you did okay. Did you get any altitude sickness?
Because we stayed in huts. I think more in the form of fatigue. And I made one of the classic rookie mistakes. I didn't want to buy shoes who I had, but the shoes I had were my size, my foot size, rather than a size larger.
Oh.
So the worst experience I had, I think even if I had altitude, it was overshadowed by the discomfort of wearing shoes that are too tight and there's no others I could wear. So that's the one experience I remember that was terrible. But we summited, so, you know. yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I made it all okay, but yeah, I wouldn't be going back anytime soon.
I also saw that you went to America. You came to the U.S. for 3 weeks, and you started in Boston and drove across the country. Is that right?
Yeah, that is one of my most memorable trips I've ever done. Actually, it was one long trip. I did Mount Kenya and then traveled from Kenya to Namibia by road. Then we went to South Africa. Then I flew to Boston.
Wow.
To visit my friend whose husband was away. So we did the 3 weeks from Boston to LA following one route. And because she had managed to get a pass for the national parks, our route was determined by, you know, trying to get
to
visit as many as we could. While trying to cover as many states as we could along the way and visiting random friends along the way. So we came back when we got to LA, we had friends we stayed with. Then we traveled to San Francisco and took a different route back. So by the time we did it all, it was like 14 states, I don't know, 15,000 kilometers.
Wow.
I think we must have done like 7 national parks and 7... And, you know, state parks, national parks, you know, it was just fantastic. There's just no word to describe. But I have to say that I've traveled quite a bit in America because I've traveled and I've been there maybe 3 times. And yes, I maximize every time I come there. So we actually driven from Boston to Mahone Bay in Canada. And come back with the same friend. So I've actually done a lot of traveling. I've been to the Grand Canyon. That was fascinating. Las Vegas, and you know.
Did you get up to? Did you get to Yellowstone?
Yeah. Yes. We did Yellowstone. I saw bison and the hot springs. I saw another fascinating one is Mount Rushmore.
Oh yeah,
that was fascinating. Very fascinating for me. We did Zion National Park.
Bryce Canyon down there is in Utah. Beautiful.
Yes, in Utah. Utah is amazing.
Yes.
And Rocky Mountain as well. Yeah, it was fascinating. Oh, my goodness. I should write the book, I haven't got around to it.
What year did you first go to the U.S.?
That was 2007. Actually, I was just so fortunate because it was a conference. I was coming to attend a conference and then, you know, my boss had been invited to a conference and he was like, I don't want to go to America. Would you believe it? And he was asking kindly if I could go on his behalf. Woo!
Where was the conference?
At Duke University.
Oh, North Carolina.
Yes, North Carolina, exactly.
Okay. So when you finally went there for the first time, was it like you thought of when you saw it on TV and in the movies?
Yes, in many ways, but what I wasn't prepared for was the cold. I had not prepared at all. I don't think I could have. I was coming from Kenya. And it wasn't even winter yet. That was...
Oh, boy.
Maybe it was heading there, end of November. But I was so traumatized. I mean, it was beautiful. I eventually appreciated, you know, the leaves, the fall, and, you know, just how it looks like in pictures, how developed the place is. That was nice. But yeah, the cold, that's what I remember of my first trip. I couldn't believe how cold it was. I wanted to get out. I couldn't get out soon enough. And I've never returned it, you know, outside of summer.
So what part of the world do you want to go to now?
Much of Central West Africa, so around Gabon, Angola, Sao Tome and Principe, so that's an unknown, because I've traveled a lot, so I've done maybe like half, 34 countries or something like that. And a largely unexplored part of the world is all of that is below Atlanta, south of North America. So I've never been to Central America, never been even to Florida, never been to the South American continent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so all never... that is undiscovered. So
beautiful. Yeah, Mexico, Panama, Costa Rica, that's all good stuff. And then Brazil.
Yes. I want to cover all of South America. It's that is unexplored. So yeah.
Okay.
I want to visit all of that. And also the stands. I haven't been to the stands. I'm very curious about Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan.
Oh yeah.
All that area. Probably not the best place to head right now, but eventually.
What about the craziest thing you've eaten on the road? What is the strangest thing you've eaten while traveling?
There are some worms that they eat traditionally here. I'm not even sure I remember the name. I think it is, there are worms.
Worms.
They have a name for them, but anyway, wasn't craving for them too much. They're big fat worms, you know, that just before they turn into caterpillar, they are harvested and roasted, and yeah, they love them. And also, while I was working in South Sudan, between South Sudan and Central Africa, just not very far from the border, it's, as you can imagine, the situation there, it's a little too far from, you know, proper governance, and people just live for survival. It was part of work. We were going there to support health facilities. And when you're in such areas, you don't really, you are advised not to, unless you have a very sensitive stomach, don't ask about what you're eating. So when we were deep in the bush, we'd get meats that look dicey. You'd be told it could be monkey, it could be warthog, it could be just about anything. Just eat. Don't ask. And it was tasty.
Yeah.
Well, adventurous.
I forgot to say the one country that I've been to with my favorite food in Africa is Ethiopia. I spent a week there, and the food there was wonderful.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've also spent a lot of time in Ethiopia. I actually went there alone, and I have friends. In fact, the people I travel with in Boston, U.S. are from Ethiopia. But yes, let me say, good for you that you enjoy the injera and the food, because not everyone does.
Oh, yeah,
and
it was very good.
I enjoy it as well. I love Ethiopian food. Yeah, yeah, and Ethiopia is coming up. I think they just have challenges with their civil. You know, you asked earlier about which countries are coming up. Yeah, Ethiopia has potential, but they have, their challenges with civil unrest. So, yeah, with time, they are developing very fast, and I'm sure with time it will be, it's growing. It's growing touristically, let me say.
Let's wrap it up. This is the part where you get to plug your business. Mm-hmm. And tell us all about your websites and your social media. Where can people follow you? Where can people find you if they want to get your coaching advice?
So I'm more active on Instagram and Facebook. Search for Travel with MK. That is Travel with MKAY as one word. So Travel with MK. If you search for Maria Kamau, you will get tons of them. So Travel with MK on Instagram and on Facebook. For my website, travelwithmk.co.ke. Again, Travel with MKAY. Yeah, on LinkedIn. Not very active, but yes, also there with Travel with MK.
Great.
Yeah.
So you mention AI on your site a lot, you know, because I've talked to a number of travel agents and people with travel businesses, and people wonder about what the effect of AI is going to have on their business. Mm-hmm. And you say on your site that, look, AI can give you a list of things to do, but they can't tell you more than that, you know? Yes. And so tell them about what you can offer that they can't get online.
Great, thank you. That's a good one. So I think what's interesting about what's happening with AI is that it has grown a lot and people are turning to it. But the more and more you interact with AI, the more you crave back for human interaction. It's good. It's becoming more evident when it's an AI, when you're interacting with AI, because it's a machine and it's will give responses that may not resonate, particularly with Africans. And so what you get from me is a human interaction, curated resources, experiences shared to help you get the human side of travel that's real. I've traveled a lot to over 96 countries, and I've traveled as an African on an ordinary Kenyan passport. And so I know a bit more about right. actual travel experiences, and so can help you plan your travel without booking, without making bookings for you, so that you are empowered to do it yourself. And for me, when you interact with me, it's what I call a one-time investment, because what I'm doing is helping you get resources, answer your questions, understand, you know, what to look out for, all these nuances about different, especially on the visa issues that we get, in a way that you can have travel as a lifestyle rather than a one-off. And I will be sending you into the sunset to your very bright travel future, long-term travel future with confidence.
Do you lead these any trips anymore, or are you just basically pointing people in the right direction?
I'm pointing people in the right directions because I do understand that travel is different for different people. And so rather than try and package or try to do things, we tend to do things the way we like to do them. And so when you have a group of different people who don't realize they have different interests and have different ways in which they want to do things, then that's where we get the clash. So this is why I prefer to do one-on-one or groups if people are comfortable, so that people travel. Just like you sit at a table and you make an order, and there are people, you have such varied interests, there are people who wouldn't even eat what you're eating for various reasons, whether it's likes or, you know, being allergic or whatever. And so travel is the same. We just have, we may all want to go to Paris or New York or South Africa, but we all want to experience it in different ways. And so I prefer to support people, to empower them, to have the confidence to do travel, you know, on their own terms, even picking right. partners or not. This is something that I, you know, give you support so that you do you in the way that you prefer. And if you want to use a travel agent, if that's fine. I'm not saying don't use them. I'm just empowering you so that even if you choose to use a travel agent, you are empowered so that you are able to interact with them in a way that suits you, not how it suits them.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I would do the same thing. People have asked me over the years if I'd be interested in, like, oh, you should lead groups around, you know, and travel with you and everything. And I think it would drive me crazy.
Yes.
Because people drive. it's one of the reasons you and I have traveled so much on our own. Because
yes.
Dealing with others and their different quirks, you know, my days in the service industry are over in that aspect, and fielding complaints and things like that. I mean, but I can point you in the right direction. And if I do have an opinion on these places that I've been, and
yes.
and I can give you what I know. So I think, yes, you and I have the same kind of temperament for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you have seen a lot, like you said, over 90 countries. And what has all this taught you? I mean, how has it changed you as a person? And how has it changed how you've seen the world?
Wow. For one thing, I've come to appreciate, first of all, how much of a privilege it's been for me to be able to see. So the more I've traveled, the more I've learned that even coming from where I come from, really it's a lot of people travel, but the majority of people don't. And some are not interested. Many just can't afford to, whether it's money or time or just knowing how. So I've come to appreciate it is a privilege. In fact, one thing I usually say is like, I didn't realize it, but when I travel, everybody else is at work. Especially when you travel for tourism, you know? So from the one who's checking you in to the one who's taking you there to the one who's showing you around, hotels, tour guides, everyone you meet along the way, 99% of the world is at work while, you know, I have the privilege of traveling. But it's also helped me appreciate the similarities of people, even as we appreciate the differences. That that aspect alone, that everyone else is at work, it's like wherever you go, there are people and they are just trying to, you know, make their livelihoods, look after their families, they have a better life. We have misunderstandings because of our limited view of others, and I myself have experienced that. I didn't realize I have biases until I started to travel. And so I travel extensively and then realize, oh, I thought these people were this way. And, you know, I rarely do research. I prefer to just, the only research I do I need a visa or not and what is there to do. But I prefer to travel as much as possible on a blank slate so that then I can get mostly pleasantly surprised learning about others. And so I've learned more about myself, apart from what I like to do and what I don't like to do, but also just the fact that I like connecting with people, social. I appreciate being exposed to other people so that I have hopefully an unbiased worldview and prefer to take the positive side. And in general, I've also come to appreciate that much of the time, it's an advantage to know English, by the way, and thank you, Americans, for being so widely traveled, because you have led the way. Thank you, African-Americans, because many times people think I'm an American, for going ahead of us. But I've also come to appreciate that the language barrier can make people seem unfriendly when it's just language or cultural barrier can make many places feel unfriendly or unsafe. But it's just simply because we can't communicate with each other, and that makes anyone uneasy if we don't understand each other, metaphorically or practically. And so that has also been one interesting experience traveling across Africa to places that don't speak English. So, you know, with Ubuntu, I see you, I understand you, we feel each other. But if we cannot communicate, of course, it's a struggle. So it's been life-changing in such a positive way. That's
wonderful.
You know, for as long as you can, every place has people, and all those people are just trying to make their lives. It's a huge, huge, beautiful world. Every variation that we have as human beings is as good as the similarities. It's beautiful.
That's a great answer. Well, I appreciate you doing this. Travels with MK, M-K-A-Y. Look her up. And if you have any questions about Africa or traveling anywhere else, she's a great resource and a great coach. So, Maria, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. I have a lot of editing to do. So I'm going to get on this. But thank you so much. And hopefully thank our paths you. Will cross somewhere along the line.
Yes, indeed. I do hope so. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Maria Kamau, everybody.
Travel doesn't always go to plan, and that's where the best stories live. Welcome to the Winging It Travel podcast, where you don't just hear about travel, you feel it. I'm James Hammond, and I'm podcasting my own journeys from the road, sharing immersive soundscape episodes that drop you right into the moment, from busy streets to remote mountains. Along the way, I sit down with local people and fellow travelers to tell honest stories about life, culture, and chase an adventure beyond the routine. No filters, no fake perfection, just stories to tell, tips to share, and experiences to inspire. Search Winging It Travel Podcast on any podcast app and let's wing it.
Quick question. Do you want travel tips from people who have actually been there?
Our show is co-hosted by Tim Johnson, an award-winning travel journalist who's been to more than 145 countries around the world. And I'm David Brody, the other co-host who's been travel podcasting for 20 years while traveling to 50-plus countries around the world.
In about 10 or 20 minutes per show, we break down a destination with the kind of insight you usually only get from long guidebooks or hours of research.
So if you want expert advice, zero fluff, and travel inspiration that you can actually use, search for Travel in 10 wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can also find us at voyescape.com.